What shall we do to keep our planet beautiful? It's actually a really big question, isn't it? What are we going to do? I've been pondering this for a number of years now, and I know that a majority of the people in this congregation, I'm sure, ponder the same thing and take actions to be more environmentally friendly in the way that they go about their lives. And I know that, you know, we make decisions when we're buying certain items and so on and so forth. But there is still that kind of sense of, well, what are we going to do about it? For me, I will say very briefly, I grew up on a farm in the countryside. I've always been very outdoorsy and interested in the countryside. Went on to study geography, and it was then that I first heard about climate change. Now, that was in 1992. In 1990, there had been the first IPCC report that had come out on climate change, and obviously, that, you know, it was all very new. How to measure these things was very new as well. So we'll talk more about that at a later stage on what the IPCC were doing. But it was very new, and actually, at the time, I remember reading up on it and thinking, "Oh my goodness, this is really quite concerning." And actually, but most people at the time were thinking, that's not really happening. There's nothing really going on there. And so trying to have conversations with anybody about it was a little bit of a waste of time, because nobody really kind of wanted to believe anything was happening. You carry on with life and you do your normal things. I think we'd done certain things, like we've never had a tumble dryer just because I thought it was a waste of energy. We didn't really need one, and we could do things in other ways. And then it was really in 2004 when I had two dreams within a month, and they were really both quite deep, sort of quite shocking dreams, really. And they both woke me up, and I won't go into details about them now. I'll be happy to talk to you about them at another time, but they're quite long. So I had these dreams, and it really left me disturbed and thinking, Lord, what is it that you're trying to say to me? And I just felt he was saying, you need to look into climate change, go back to that subject and look at it again. And so I started Googling, and I found, to my surprise, that the following week there was a climate change conference happening in High Wycombe. So I thought, well, it's very handy. And it was at a church. It was a Christian one. So I thought, well, this will be good. I'll go to this. So Clive and I got on the bus, went down to Wycombe to the conference. And the keynote speaker there was Sir John Houghton, who was the previous chair. He was the first chair to the IPCC scientific assessments. And so he was incredibly knowledgeable about this subject. He's a Christian. And he spoke really... really amazingly, actually. And I think that was quite a turning point for me. I think, actually, I really need to go away and do something different. So from that, I then came back and set up a group, which was not, it wasn't a church group, it was a group in the community. We had some people from the church in it. Nettie was in it. We had a couple from Maidenhead. And it was really looking at lifestyles. And it looked... Firstly, we just focused on different areas because, for me, we could all do various things that we knew were environmentally friendly, but I didn't know what the impact was of those things I was doing. So was it better that I insulated my house, or was it better that I drove around in a sort of a friendlier car, as it were, or what are the things that we really need to do? So what I did was just get loads and loads and loads of statistics. It was all about statistics and figures. And we met every week, and every month rather, and we would look at a different subject. So the first month was like house and home. So we'd look at our insulation and everything to do with the home. And we would have all the facts and figures and work out what were the key things we could do that would really make the difference. And we would all commit to doing one thing over that month, and then the next month we'd meet, and then we looked at travel and transport. We ended up going on some holidays by train, which were really good, which I totally regretted not doing this year when we're stuck at an airport, because we probably would have been there twice the speed by train. So there were sort of certain things that we were doing, and I think there were times when we've done a lot more about it, and there's times when we've sort of taken our foot off the accelerator and really not done very much at all. And then, of course, in 2012, I started doing the What Next show, which was all about the environment. And then, therefore, you know, when you're researching, when you're talking about it, and then, obviously, from a point of integrity, if you're talking about it, you really need to be doing something about it as well. So that was really challenging. So I think the last few years for me have been a time when I've made more changes to my personal life and the way that I've done things. And certainly this year for me has been a bit of a turning point with my bicycle, because now instead of just taking the car into town, I'm much more likely to think, okay, I just go and get the bike out without thinking about it so much. So that's quite good. Food-wise as well, definitely a lot less meat going on in our house now. Lizzie's a vegetarian and we're almost there. So we're all doing bits, but I am so aware that what I do isn't enough. And so I'm really hoping that the time that we have considering this and debating it will be a real encouragement for all of us, so we can encourage one another. And I need more encouragement. I think we all need more encouragement to do a little bit more. So on that note, Sir John Houghton had said, when I saw him on that other... number of years ago, stewardship means recognizing that the earth is the Lord's, entrusted by God to us, and that we shall have to give account for our use of the earth's resources and our relationship with the whole of creation. And that, for me, is the challenge, really, is that we are held account for how we use things and what we have. And so that's something that I'm really sort of processing and considering at the moment. What we're going to do now is we're going to have another short video clip from Leonardo DiCaprio. Again, he mentions a COP meeting in Paris. The COP is the Conference of Parties, which has been taking place every year for the last 21 years. And that was very significant, the last one, because it was an agreement from every nation in the world made an agreement there. So it was very, very significant. I went along and marched outside Parliament on that when it was happening. And So after that, Chloe's going to come up and explain to us a lot more about Eco Church and share with us a bit more.
2014 will go down as the warmest year around the globe in recorded history.
2015 was the hottest year since climate records began.
Figures show this July was the single hottest month in recorded history.
Australia sweltered through its hottest spring on record.
The phenomenon was a short-term trigger to a long-term global warming caused by human activity.
Climate change is now affecting every country on every continent.
It's the rate that's a great concern.
And what do you put that rate down to, Bill?
Oh, it's human activity.
I think it's ridiculous. We have bigger problems right now, and it'll get cooler, it'll get warmer. It's called weather.
I do not believe that human activity is causing these dramatic changes to our climate the way these scientists are portraying.
1.2 million people died because of the pollution put up into the air.
This is a result of climate change. It's right. Only going to get worse. This is a big problem, and it's not going to go away.
The debate is over. Climate change is real. It is already causing major problems. And if we do not act boldly and decisively, a bad situation will become worse.
As a UN messenger of peace, I have traveled all over the world for the last 2 years documenting how this crisis is changing the natural balance of our planet. I have seen cities like Beijing choked by industrial pollution, ancient boreal forests in Canada that have been clear-cut, and rainforests in Indonesia that have been incinerated. In India, I met farmers whose crops have been literally washed away by historic flooding. In America, I have witnessed unprecedented droughts in California and sea level rise flooding the streets of Miami. In Greenland and in the Arctic, I was astonished to see that ancient glaciers are rapidly disappearing, well ahead of scientific predictions. All that I have seen and learned on my journey has absolutely terrified me. There is no doubt in the world scientific community that this is a direct result of human activity, and the effects of climate change will become astronomically worse in the future. Our planet cannot be saved unless we leave fossil fuels in the ground where they belong. Now think about the shame that each of us will carry when our children and grandchildren look back and realize that we had the means of stopping this devastation, but simply lacked the political will to do so. Yes, we have achieved the Paris Agreement. More countries have come together here to sign this agreement today than for any other cause in the history of humankind. And that is reason for hope. But unfortunately, the evidence shows us that it will not be enough. A massive change is required right now, one that leads to a new collective consciousness, a new collective evolution of the human race, inspired and enabled by a sense of urgency from all of you. We can congratulate each other today, but it will mean absolutely nothing if you return to your countries and fail to push beyond the promises of this historic agreement. Now is the time for bold, unprecedented action. It is time to declare no more talk, no more excuses, no more 10-year studies, no more allowing the fossil fuel companies to manipulate and dictate the science and policies that affect our future. The world is now watching. You will either be lauded by future generations or vilified by them. You are the last best hope of Earth. We ask you to protect it, or we and all living things we cherish are history.
That's really heavy, isn't it? It's quite hard to follow that. But the way that I feel when I watch that, and the way that I feel when I put myself in front of this kind of information, is the reason why I'm up here, the reason why I wanted to bring Eco Church to River Marlow. And you might be like me, you see something like that, or you hear some of those facts this morning about what's happening to the rainforest or how the icebergs are melting, and we know intuitively that something is wrong, you know, that fast fashion is causing us to exploit our resources, it's exploiting people, that there are some things that are wrong in the system of how our world is working. But you might be like me, you get kind of really fired up in that moment, and then it's like, well, I don't really know what to do about that. Or you might start doing a bit of recycling or doing whatever, and then, you know, your head just starts getting filled up with all this other stuff, doesn't it? Because I hear way more messages about how I need to get a new phone than I hear messages about how I need to look after the planet or appreciate the trees around me that are giving me clean air. And so I think it also takes courage to face up to what is actually quite a difficult truth to have to face up to, the fact that we humans are damaging our planet, especially in the West. Our lifestyles are damaging it. And so I think that kind of combination of factors makes it really easy to just kind of let all this stuff go and just carry on with normal life. And that's definitely been my story. So I guess climate change kind of came onto my radar when I was at university. And at that time, it was kind of playing out in the newspapers quite a lot, this kind of debate over whether climate change was real. And that's when I found out about it. And I got a bit fired up, started this sustainability group at my university to try and make the university be more eco-friendly. I went on my one and only ever protest march in London with Christian Aid to get the government to take notice of climate change. But then after that, maybe 5-6 years passed, and so I didn't really think about it. You know, I did my recycling and stuff, but other than that, I wasn't really kind of challenging myself about this stuff. But nearly 4 years ago now, I started working for the National Trust. And, you know, the purpose of the National Trust is to look after all these beautiful places that we've been talking about, the kinds of places people have been visiting this summer, you know, coastline, countryside, like the beautiful Chilterns, mountains, as well as, you know, historic houses. And the aspiration is to look after them forever, which I think is amazing. We live in this kind of like time where everyone's just thinking about right now, this very minute, you know, getting online and finding out a piece of information right now. And they're thinking about forever. And that it's not a Christian organization. anyway, so after I joined the National Trust, Karen here asked me onto Marlow FM. And she asked me to talk about the National Trust because, it's, you know, it's environmental. And once she'd hooked me in once, she then roped me into becoming her co-presenter. And like she was saying, you know, every fortnight we'd be like searching up all this stuff, you know, and learning about, you know, because everything is impacting the planet. So, you know, we'd be learning about fashion or food or fuel and energy. And we'd get really fired up and passionate and excited. And we'd be talking about these innovative solutions and new technology that was coming that was going to help us and these amazing organizations that were doing things about it. And we really fired up and we'd be like, right, we're going to do something different. And then 2 weeks later, we'd be on the radio again and be like, oh, what have we done? What have we done that's been different? So it's really easy, I know this is my experience that we get fired up and then we just let it go. But what has happened is over those years, it's changed me as I've learned more and more and more. It's changed my perspective. It's changed my priorities. And then when we found out about Eco Church last year, Paul Taylor from All Saints and also involved with Love Marlowe, he told us about it. We went along to this information evening. And what's been really amazing for me is during that process of learning about Eco Church, it's kind of fused this passion that's been growing inside me with my faith. And it's now become like this integral part of how I express my faith. And it just feels like my faith has now never been more relevant, because climate change and the way that we're looking after the planet is the biggest issue of our generation, and it's going to affect all of the generations to come. And here we are, knowing that we've been created by God, knowing that he created this amazing planet, and we should be the people who have got the biggest passion about this, because we know it was our Father that made it and that he put us here to look after it. In Proverbs it says, a good man will leave an inheritance for his children's children. The National Trust is talking about looking after places forever. Leonardo DiCaprio said, we will either be lauded by future generations or vilified by them. We are the last best hope of earth. It's very dramatic, but it reminded me of Jesus saying, we're the light of the world, not just for humans, for the whole world. And our world is looking after us and we need to look after it. So I think that becoming an eco church is a way for us to start being able just to support and encourage each other in facing up to this situation and starting to act differently. I think it's an opportunity for us to all do what we know in our heart of hearts is right by this earth, and to start celebrating and taking care of God's amazing creation. So if you're up for going on this journey together, I think a good place for us to start is just to start opening up our hearts wide to care about this lovely world that God has made. We tend to ignore what we don't care about, but we naturally take care of what we love. So what I'd like to do is just invite Matthew up, and he's going to come and read to us from Genesis. And he's just going to read the whole creation story. So I just wanted to encourage you just to close your eyes, relax, and just imagine God creating our world.
First this. God created the heavens and the earth. All you see and all you don't see. Earth was a soup of nothingness, a bottomless emptiness and an inky blackness. And God's spirit brooded like a bird above the watery abyss. God spoke, light, and light appeared. God saw that the light was good and separated the light from the dark. God named the light day, he named the dark night. It was evening, it was morning, day one. God spoke, sky. In the middle of the waters, separate water from water. God made the sky. He separated the water under the sky from the water above the sky. And there it was. He named the sky the heavens. It was evening. It was morning. Day two. God spoke. Separate water beneath heaven, gather into one place, and land appear. And there it was. God named the land earth, and he named the pooled water ocean. God saw that it was good. God spoke, earth, green up, grow, all varieties of seed-bearing plants, every sort of fruit-bearing tree, and there it was. Earth produced green seed-bearing plants, all varieties, and fruit-bearing trees of all sorts. God saw that it was good. It was evening, it was morning, day three. God spoke, "Lights, come out. Shine in heaven's sky. Separate day from night. Mark seasons and days and years. Lights in heaven's sky, give light to this earth." And there it was. God made two big lights. The larger to take charge of the day, the smaller to be in charge of the night. And he made the stars. He placed them in the heavenly sky to light up the earth and oversee day and night to separate light and dark. God saw that it was good. It was evening. It was morning, day four. God spoke, "Swarm, ocean, with fish and all sea life and birds, fly through the sky over the earth." God created the huge whales and all the swarm of life in the water and every kind and species of flying birds. God saw that it was good. God blessed them. Prosper, reproduce, fill the ocean. Birds, reproduce on the earth. It was evening, it was morning, day five. God spoke, "Earth, generate life, every sort and kind. Cattle and reptiles and wild animals, all kinds." And there it was. Wild animals of every kind. Cattle of all kinds, every sort of reptile and bug. God saw that it was good. God spoke, "Let us make human beings in our image. Make them reflecting our nature so they can be responsible for the fish in the sea and the birds in the air, the cattle and, yep, the earth itself and every animal that moves on the face of the earth." God created human beings and he created them godlike, reflecting God's nature. He created them male and female. God blessed them, prosper, reproduce, fill the earth, take charge, be responsible for fish in the sea and birds in the air, for every living thing that moves on the face of the earth. And then God said, "I've given you every sort of seed-bearing plant on earth and every kind of fruit-bearing tree, given them to you for food. And to all animals and all birds, everything that moves and breathes, I give whatever grows out of the ground for food." And there it was. God looked over everything he had made. It was so good. So very good. It was evening. It was morning. Day six. Heaven and earth were finished, down to the last detail. By the seventh day, God had finished his work. On the seventh day, he rested from all his work. God blessed the seventh day. He made it a holy day because on that day, he rested from his work, all the creating God had done. And this is the story of how it all started, of heaven and earth when they were created.
So, just a couple of minutes, have a chat with the people around you. So, we just heard about how God made the world. I'm not saying it's a 7-day creation or making any comment on that. But God made it, however he made it. How would you feel, if you were God, about the planet and all the forms of life that you've created? And then being mindful of that, how do you individually feel about the way that we've been harming creation? So, just a few minutes, have a chat. Just going to bring you back in. Sorry, I know it's a bit of a big topic for not that much time. What I just want to show you now is just like a one-minute clip from this film that's called The Overview Effect. It's really fascinating. It's basically, you can look it up. When astronauts go out to space, they're obviously going out to, you know, find a planet, go to the moon, whatever. But what ends up really blowing them away often is when they can look back at the Earth, and it's this thing called the overview effect. So hopefully, if all goes well, this will just show you a minute. They're all astronauts, the people who are talking, and they're just describing the overview effect.
We have this connection to Earth. I mean, it's our home. And I don't know how you can come back and not, you know, in some way be changed. It may be subtle. You see differences in, you know, different people and the just general response when they come back from space. But I think collectively everybody has that emblazoned on their memories, the way the planet looks. You know, you can't take that lightly. It really, you know, you realize that you've been blessed by the opportunity to see that.
It really does look like this beautiful oasis out in the middle of nothingness. And if you have a chance for your eyes to adjust and you can actually see the stars in the Milky Way, you know, it's this oasis in against the backdrop of infinity, you know, this just, you know, enormous universe behind it. And it's, you know, really a very moving experience to be able to see that with your eyes.
You look back at it and it's placed perfectly from the sun to take care of us. And you kind of take that reverse role on about, okay, well, we need to be taking care of it too, so that it can continue to do that for us. And I don't know how you can't have a greater appreciation for it after you see it that way.
I just thought it was cool that they've probably got the closest perspective to God on our planet, and like kind of seeing it created. So these are the, when they describe the overview effect, these are the common features of the overview effect: a feeling of awe for the planet, a profound sense of understanding the interconnection of all life, and a renewed sense of responsibility for taking care of the environment. And I kind of felt like that's the place that I want us to get to. The old Archbishop, Rowan Williams, said, when asked about climate change, he said, "When I'm asked about whether I'm optimistic or pessimistic about the future, I always say neither. I'm hopeful. An optimist says it's all going to turn out all right. A pessimist says it's all going to turn out wrong. A hopeful person says it's possible we can make it better. That's a place I'm very happy to talk from, because I believe with all my heart that it's possible we can make things better. The slogan I've often quoted in this respect is from Martin Luther, the great reformer who said that if he knew the world was going to end tomorrow, he would plant a tree, meaning never mind what's going to happen tomorrow, decide what's a good thing to do today, and the future unfolds out of that." So from that place of a hope for the future, a sense of awe and curiosity about this amazing planet that Father God has created, I'd like to finally introduce Eco Church. So it's an award scheme for churches in England and Wales who want to demonstrate that the gospel is good news for God's earth. It is a partnership project between Arosha, who I'll tell you a little bit more about, and also Tear Fund, Christian Aid, Church of England, and many other denominations. And their vision is that a vast network of churches will become local centres of creation care in community, that they'll be shining beacons of hope for a brighter environmental future. And Arosha is a Christian charity. Its purpose is to protect and restore the natural world in response to the biblical mandate to care for God's earth, and to be a demonstration of Christian hope for God's world. And this is just a couple of pictures, just so you kind of know who they are and what Eco Church is about, of what else Arosha does. So like in the top two pictures, they're based in London, and these are areas that were completely derelict. They had antisocial behaviour going on in them, fly tipping, and now they've created basically kind of oases for wildlife and for people to go and visit. They've got organic allotments in there, beehives, wildflower gardens. It's just really good. It's just really good news. They support kind of rural projects. They kind of lend their expertise to other organisations and community groups that are trying to look after areas of beauty. And they run like education projects for school children. But their other big piece of work is Eco Church. And that's because they believe that it's a necessary part of Christian discipleship. And the award scheme is designed to kind of motivate and resource churches so that they can start caring for God's earth better. And so that this can just become an integral part of our everyday work and demonstration of faith. So What happens is you go online and you fill out this questionnaire on behalf of your church, which is what I've done for us. And this gives you examples of, like, basically kind of the points and the categories. So they ask you questions about all areas of church life. So you've got worship and teaching, buildings and land, which we don't need to worry about because we don't own any. And then community and global and lifestyle. And what happens is you answer all these questions, which gives you a chance to think about what you're already doing, which is already really good for the planet, and also sort of reflect on the stuff that you're not doing at the moment. So you collect points as you answer the questions. So with this one church example here, you've got basically you can be in the black, which is where you haven't earned enough to then hit bronze, or then you can go up to silver and you can go up to gold. So on that, say that first church up the top there, they've got three categories of which have hit bronze. They've got one category which has hit silver. But on their buildings, they still haven't got enough points to hit bronze. So once they've got bronze in their buildings, that church would qualify for their bronze award. Does that make sense? Yeah. So do you want to know how we did?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I'm hoping there might be some stuff that I don't know about. but either way... we've probably got quite a lot to do, even if we wanted to get up to gold. There would still be a long way to go. But never fear. There are loads of resources on the Eco Church website, and there's also a whole room full of super intelligent people. So what we want to do next week is we'll have a portion of the service where we'll have each of those categories that it kind of asks questions about, and whichever bit you're interested in or whichever bit you have influence over in the church or participate in, you can kind of, we'll just kind of get into groups around those areas and just start thinking about like what we could start doing as a church practically. And what Karen and I would like to aspire to is that by the end of 2018... I'm glad you found that funny. Getting my home back now, I'm finally at the front. Is that we might get our recycled wooden pew bronze award by the end of 2018, which I think is totally achievable, but we will all have to play our role. Glad you like that. So, just wanted to finish off with four suggestions, four little challenges that you could go away and do this week. So the first one, look up from your phone, look up from the busyness of life and just like enjoy all the amazing creation that's around us, all the beauty. I'm always blown away just by the sky, stuff like that. Just enjoy it this week and remember that God made it. This is really interesting. So this is one of the things that you'll all be helping us to get points on the Eco Church thing if you do this, is to do a carbon footprint calculator. So Tier Fund recommend this one, made by the World Wildlife Fund. I've put the address on there, but just Google WWF carbon footprint calculator. Now, it only takes 5 minutes, which means it's really easy, but obviously doesn't mean it's 100% scientific. But just go with it. And it's just really interesting. It'll kind of give you a percentage of how much carbon you're using versus like the sustainable amount of carbon that we should all be using. And then there's a whole bunch of like advice and like stuff that can help you make some decisions about what you want to do personally to potentially change that. Don't know if anyone's ever watched Peter Kay's Car Share, but think of all the fun you can have sharing cars. So it's just a little thing, maybe next week when you're coming to church. I know it won't work for everyone, but if you can share a lift or walk or cycle, I just thought that could be like a little challenge that everyone could try and take on for next week. And then just a green light bulb to say, bring your ideas and creativity next week. Start having to think this week about what we could start doing as a church to move forward.